Have you ever wanted to play the perfect tabletop game, where story beats run smoothly, and there's no awkward pauses between dice rolls? Yeah, me too. But since that's impossible, I did the next best thing, and novelized my Witcher tabletop game to showcase the story in its cleanest form. The result is this podcast. I'm Jacob Gerstel, and this is Tales from the Witcher. Part audiobook, part actual play, part serialized adventure, and a whole new way to vicariously enjoy tabletop games. Welcome to the world of The Witcher, where monsters roam freely and the continent is once again at war. If you were hoping to follow the plight of Geralt of Rivia, however, I'm not going to be doing that. Instead, I offer you the story of a not-so-merry band of degenerates who are making their way across the continent. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. The End of All Things. Splintered arrows pepper the trees. We regularly rent our souls. Our homes are broken. Their chimneys spew bile. We pray to the gods in anger. For our youth, our future is rotting. Their swords met Dwan in the field, but were crushed underfoot like flowers. There is nothing but ruin and despair in Dol Blathana and Silver Towers. Nenna of Loa Posada, the Withered Rose of Shedawed. For as we all know, there is a scale that measures cosmic balance amongst all the dimensions, and our universe is not exempt from it. To take from one end of the scale, be it coin or possessions or life, means the other side must be balanced in one way or another. Perhaps new life is born into this world, or ill-gotten wealth is recovered, or moral retribution is dealt to an undeserving people who will never understand why they received such malice. Often, this balancing of the scale is unseen or unknown to the original perpetrator, but it occurs nonetheless. This is the only true justice that exists. It must be respected. Dorgare of Vol, On the Balance of All Things. 1. It's time to come home, Ethramel. Down in the orchards, as twilight started falling, the boy plucked a low-hanging green apple from the tree. It was small enough to fit in the palm of his hand, and not yet ripe. The boy heard the call, but he did not hurry home. He placed the apple at the base of the tree, and saw that one of the flowers growing from the roots had bloomed early, full and yellow like the sun. The boy turned home, taking the long way back. The boy's mother, Della on Tread, waited in the doorway and watched him run barefoot in the dirt. When he arrived, she ruffled his hair and knelt, giving him a lingering hug. Then she bade him inside. Descending the stairs into the foyer, the boy's father, Matthias on Tread, caught the running Ethramel and pulled him into a hug. This was not unusual, but what his father said was, "Remember," he whispered, "you can say no." Matthias took Ethramel by the hand and led him into the study. Fitting for a nobleman's library, its walls were lined with neatly organized bookshelves. More and more, Ethramel found himself whiling away his afternoons in the study, trying to puzzle out books that were not meant for his age. Inside the library was another elf, with silken white hair cascading down his head. He dressed like Ethramel's father did when important people visited their home, in a rich red robe with gold accents along the hemlines. "Hello," the elf said to Ethramel with a smile. Della and Matthias stood behind their son and gently nudged him forward. The stranger strode to meet Ethramel and held out his hand. "My name is Filivandril and Fidhail, of the Silver Towers. Have you ever been to the Silver Towers?" Ethramel shook Filivandril's hand. "Yes, my mother and father take me to the market there every month or so." "That's good to hear." Filivandril spoke in a gentle tone, but not condescendingly. Ethramel had spoken to enough adults in his life to recognize when they weren't taking his thoughts and opinions seriously. "How old are you, Ethramel?"
"I'm 9, but I'll be 10 in March."
"You're probably wondering why I'm here. I'll admit I went out of my way to come see you." Ethramel looked back at his mother.
Why do you want to see me? He asked. I'm here because I've heard of you, Ethramel. I heard that you were... different. Special, even. But you already knew that, didn't you? Ethramel nodded. He knew what the elf spoke of. Though he didn't fully understand it, he'd come to realize he had a special power within him. The power to float a jug of milk across the table, or to turn a page of one of his father's books with the jerk of his head. When he told his friends of these powers, none of them knew what he was talking about, and his parents clearly did not like it when he did these things, so he tried his best to hide it. But, out in the orchard, he practiced cutting apples down from the tree with a focused wave of his hand. I come on behalf of Francesca Findebear, Philivandrel said. She's a powerful sorceress, and runs a school in the Silver Towers for children like you, children with special abilities. She wants you to attend this school. Me? Ethramel said, scarcely believing it. He'd imagined such things for himself, of course, like most children do at one point or another, to be sought out and told he was a hero, just like in the great tales he read. But Ethramel knew better than to genuinely believe such things. Why me? Because Francesca's of the opinion, one which I agree with, that elves with magical ability should be nurtured. You've got great potential, Ethramel. We want to see it grow. You say it like that's all that matters in an elf. Their potential, Della said. Normally I'd agree with you, m'lady. Philivandrel looked over Ethramel's head to see his mother. But since the White Roses failed revolution, we've had to put more hope into potential than we'd prefer. He looked back at Ethramel and spoke to him like he spoke to Della, like an adult. Do you understand what this means? Francesca's school is meant to raise the next generation of elven leaders. Ethramel didn't much know about the White Rose beyond the basics, but he understood what Philivandrel's words meant perfectly. He was being chosen to develop his talent. Francesca and Philivandrel aimed to make him great. He looked back at his parents and remembered his father's words in the foyer. The choice to go was clearly his alone. This was an adult decision, and any fear of making the wrong choice was overshadowed by the delight of being allowed to decide at all. I won't deceive you, Ethramel, Philivandrel said. Schooling will be tough. You'll live in the Silver Towers and occupy your time with rigorous training. You won't be able to see your friends out here, at least for a while. And even if you do, in a few years you'll look at them differently, and they you. Your parents can visit as often as they wish, but your priority will be the school. Matthias's regal face remained placid, and his mother looked on the verge of tears. They would visit often, Ethramel hoped, if he went. He had friends, but none he would miss terribly. Yet this home, with the apple orchard, was all he'd ever known. Would he miss it? Ethramel suspected he would. But childhood dreams have a way of swelling up when presented an opportunity to do so, and the allure of becoming a powerful leader, with all the respect that entailed, proved too great a temptation for Ethramel. He made the first adult decision of his young life. I'll go with you, he said. Matthias's placid facade broke, and a sob escaped his lips. Della burst into tears. I know how you must feel, Philivandrel said, but this is a blessing in disguise. Your son will go on to do great things. Don't try to soothe us, Della said. You made it clear before Ethramel arrived that the Council has the power to ignore our wishes. Our son made his choice, and we'll have to do our best to honor it. She looked to Ethramel. You'll always have a home here. Ethramel nodded, understanding that what his mother really was saying was that he could come home if he didn't like the school. But he knew that wasn't likely. The idea of controlling his power held strong, and he fantasized about all the battles he would win for Dol Blathana when he was older. His words and actions would carry weight with the elves. His life would have meaning, would have purpose. 2. The portal closed behind them with a quiet sucking sound, like a body pulled beneath placid water. Ethramel felt exhausted from the effort. It was one thing to teleport himself or his companions. It was quite another to teleport twice as many across the continent. They stood on a scrubby plateau at the base of the Blue Mountains, and he leaned against a withered and bent tree to catch his breath.
"I trust this was sufficiently far enough to avoid detection, since you lot were so keen on that," Ethermel gasped. "I hope you witchers have an idea where we are, because I sure as hell don't."
"Give us a second to get our bearings," Guess of Lyria said, scanning the horizon. Down below was a swath of green forest. "Lethu and I have traveled up and down the Blue Mountains dozens of times. We'll find the right path." Ethermel loosed his sword and scabbard from his belt and sat beneath the bent tree. He placed the elven falchion across his lap and pulled the blade from its sheath. The steel was forged centuries ago, and it had been dulled and battered through the ages.
"You never did let me patch that sword up for you," Jeremiah said.
He hobbled against the tree and slowly lowered himself to the ground with an audible sigh of relief.
"If I recall, I made that offer to you on the road out of Ashford."
"You did," Ethermel said. "The sword is fine the way it is."
"Things can always be improved upon," Jeremiah said.
"Like your leg?" Ethermel snapped. He had not forgotten Jeremiah's attack in the prison.
"Yes," Jeremiah said slowly. "Just like my leg."
The craftsman stood up with some effort, grabbed his crutch, and started walking.
"Wait, Jeremiah," Ethermel said. "To answer your question in the prison, I did it to get help from my own people. But that didn't work as I expected."
"Color me surprised something you planned didn't work out," Jeremiah said.
"Still," Ethermel said, "I am sorry for what I did."
Jeremiah just stared at Ethermel, formulating a measured response, no doubt.
"Once I've killed your son for what he did to Yana and Duke Haggard, you'll be next."
Any remaining energy within Ethermel fled in that moment, leaving a tired husk of an elf. It was all he could do to sigh.
"We'll cross that bridge when we come to it, Jeremiah Keller."
The craftsman hobbled off to speak with Tabak. Ethermel slept. He was woken by a taut kick to his foot from Lethu of Gullet, the Kingslayer himself. He held out a meaty hand.
"Time to get going, elf. Daylight's wasting."
Guess of Lyria led the group, and Lethu took up the rear. Ethermel had not spent much of his time in Dol Blathana exploring the Blue Mountains, so nothing looked familiar as they slowly descended the rocky and scrubby path. Slowly, however, familiarity returned. He found himself remembering certain streams they crossed, clear as diamonds, or specific clusters of trees they passed that altogether looked like towering pieces of broccoli, or of the familiar chittering of squirrels above them and yipping of foxes below them and the guttural growling of badgers in the distance. Ethermel was home, and he resented how comfortable the forest of Dol Blathana felt. It was the forest, like it or not, in which he would compare every other forest on the continent. It was dense, filled with towering oaks and ash and sycamore and elm and birch and beech and alder, each trunk a varying shade of brown or gray, each branch a varying shade of green, like an oil painting come to life. Yet the underbrush of ferns and springy grass, pockmarked with bright white chrysanthemums, did not grow into wild tangles. Because while the forest of Dol Blathana was not harvested for commercial value, it was tended to and cared for, as a gardener tends to his greenery. This combination created an overwhelming sense of peace and quiet. His companion's chatter dropped when they entered the forest proper. Sunlight broke through the thick foliage above and dappled everyone's skin. It somehow felt profane to speak in such a calm stretch of nature. But Ethermel was immune to this forest charm, and he had no difficulty speaking. "Well," he said, breaking the silence in a way that must have felt like shattering glass, "I suppose I can take the lead from here. Well, sure, we want to go to the Silver Towers, yes? Even knowing I may return as a pariah?" "Because you're with Dwan," Silva said.
"No," Ethermel said, "because a century ago, Francesca Findebear and the elven elites decided it was best for our people to hide in the Blue Mountains when the Dwan laid claim to this land. I disagreed with that decision and left. Francesca should have listened to me. She said there was always hope in survival, but we never had the strength to take Dol Blathana back once we fled. We had to accept it from our conquerors as a gift."
But the sorcerer knew that wasn't altogether fair.
The elves did try to resist the Dwan 200 years ago, several decades before Ethramel was born. The revolutionary Aelorin, the White Rose of Shadowed, saw that the Dwan would only continue expanding their territory on the continent. Aelorin met resistance to fight back from the older elves, who were content to sit and simply wait for the Dwan to die out from their short lifespans. Aelorin, however, would not be deterred. She rallied thousands of young elves and met the Dwan in the field near the elven palace of Shadowed in Kedwin, convinced they would rid themselves of the humans in one strike. The battle was a massacre. Aelorin was killed, along with most of the young elves that populated the continent. This, of course, meant that the Ansaid would have difficulty repopulating forever after, as only young elves can reproduce. And it would be only 100 years later, a few decades after Ethermel was born, that the Dwan would conquer Dol Blathana, forcing his kin to flee to the Blue Mountains. And the blame for the tragedy of his people, Ethermel thought, lied forever with the older elves who refused to fight with the martyr Aelorin. If his people had been united during that time, they could have resisted the Dwan and retained supremacy on the continent. Now, it was too late. Even with Dol Blathana returned to elven hands as part of the Peace of Sintra, his people were a shadow of their former selves. Ethramel did not want to return to the Silver Towers. He felt it would do nothing but dredge up painful memories. And yet, his feet kept dragging him towards Dol Blathana's capital city. And in that fashion, just as the sun was starting to set, they reached the Green Bridge. The Green Bridge was one of the two ways to enter or exit the Silver Towers. The other was through the Yellow Gate, on the other side of the city. The Green Bridge was half constructed, half natural, a narrow strip of earth jutting into the raging White River several meters below. This earth was lush with green ferns and shrubs and willow trees. But the land bridge only covered half of the White River, so a stone bridge was built to cover the rest of the distance. And just across the White River were the walls of the Silver Towers. These walls, made of white stone and running the length of the ledge across the river as far as the eye could see, were built over 1,000 years ago, but still looked as sturdy as if made within the last decade. Tall enough to hide the city's interior, save for a handful of its silver towers, these walls were manned at regular intervals with elven guards, dressed in sparse plate armor and holding tall spears and curved shields. Ethramel stopped his companions before they stepped on the bridge. "I'm going to guess that these gods are already suspicious of us, not the least of which because we have a witch riding a fucking wooden golem." "Some things can't be helped," Dadi said, patting Yenmo's head. "You're to let me do all the talking," Ethramel said.
"I don't think we were planning on anything else," Letho of Gullet said.
He had drawn the hood of his cloak so his face was shadowed. Letho the Kingslayer was the most famous and recognizable of their group. Ethramel said, "If my kin do not want us to enter the city, they will use their longbows to make that intention clear. Be ready." "Fair enough." Tabek smiled at the sorcerer. "But I believe you'll get us inside."
"Wish I had that confidence," Ethramel thought.
He nodded, and they slowly walked across the bridge. Ethramel stopped when the land bridge ended and the stone bridge began. "My name is Ethramel Antred," he shouted in elder speech to the guard, "from the Antred family, which dates back 600 years in Dol Blathana. I have returned home and wish to gain entrance into the city." If the guards were impressed with Ethramel's ancient family name, they did not show it.
"You and your friends, you mean?" one of them asked in a cold tone.
"Yes, me and my friends," Ethramel said. "We've come to lend aid in a time of dire need. The Gutter Rebellion and the Wild Hunt gather on our borders. We haven't much time." "That's why we've been ordered to stay on high alert," the same guard said, "to keep an eye out for any tricks the Rebellion might pull. How are we to know you're the last of the Antred family?"
"The last?" Ethramel said.
"What of my mother, Della Antred?"
"Died 3 winters ago, of a fever," the guard replied. "Peaceful in her bed, so we've heard."
Ethramel's father, Matthias, had died over a decade ago in the Blue Mountains, when the elves were still hiding from the Dwan that had overtaken Dol Blathana. Ethramel only heard of it a few years later, from some wandering kin he had run across. They said Matthias was bitten the ankle by an adder, and the poison overtook him 2 days later. Yet, even then, Ethramel did not venture to the Blue Mountains to try to find his mother. He told himself back then that it was because she would be too difficult to track in the unfamiliar mountain range. But, truthfully, it was because he had still not forgiven her for choosing exile over action. Ethramel had not seen his mother or father for 100 years, since he left Dol Blathana to wander the continent on his own. And now, they were both dead.
"I repeat, how are we to know you're the last of the Untreads?" the guard said.
Ethramel was grateful for this. If he was allowed to dwell on this news any longer, he might have broken into tears.
"This proves it," Ethramel said, clearing his throat.
He drew his elven falchion, which was forged 600 years ago by the first generation of Untreads, a minor aristocratic family line that has, so far, remained unbroken. A family name that now solely rested on Ethramel's shoulders. The thought of that did bring tears to the sorcerer's eyes. He wiped them away quickly, feigning an itch. His sword caught the sunlight and shined, which thankfully hid the countless nicks and dents in the blade. Silence hung in the air for a moment.
"Is that supposed to be enough?" the guard asked. "An elven sword? We've all got one. Doesn't prove who you are."
Ethramel's sudden, unexpected, and, quite frankly, surprising pangs of grief resonated in his chest, churning and mixing with the sudden and unexpected regret at not coming back home to see his mother when she was alive. This mixture yielded anger.
"And who are you to question me or my lineage? I was born in these forests 153 years ago, to the noble name of Untread. I was taken to the Silver Towers at a young age due to my magical potential, and trained under Inidar Glenna, the Daisy of the Valleys, your Duchess Francesca Findebear, to become a sage for my people. I am a prodigal son returned, and you wish to keep me from my home and kin in their hour of need? Do so if you please, but know that the punishment for such transgression will be worse than death. Your name shall be blotted from history. I shall see to that personally. So I give you one more chance. Do you deny me entrance to this city?"
Ethramel released a shaking breath and waited. He rubbed his eyes again, as a warning to any more tears that wished to form. The two guards spoke amongst themselves. The sorcerer glanced back at his companions. Then, slowly, the gates to the Silver Towers opened.
That'll do it for this episode of Tales from the Witcher. This podcast is written and produced by Jacob Gerstel. The Witcher novels are by Andrzej Sapkowski, The Witcher games are by CD Projekt Red, and The Witcher tabletop RPG is by R. Talsorian Games. The music is by Eric Matias at soundimage.org. Be sure to leave a rating and a review, and to spread the word of this podcast far and wide. You can follow the podcast at TalesWitcherPod on X, or at talesfromthewitcher.buzzsprout.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again next week.